Greetings and salutations. That was such an abrupt greetings and salutations. Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook. This is your host, William Adon, who is really high-pitched for some reason because he's trying not to laugh. All right, so I'm William Nunn, host of Voices That Cook, who is a voice actor who likes to cook, and this is a show where I get to talk to other voice actors who also like to cook, and I have a really special guest on today, as I am trying to clear my head of this. You know, sometimes you feel like you're getting a bit of some heat going into your head because you're trying to hold back laughter or heavy exuberance of breath and you're just trying to push through. Well, I am going to push through the mountain and make sure it is shoved and the avalanche goes the other direction so that I can yell across the Alps, K-Mix Spiden is here! Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good.
Oh, so not only am I excited to have you on the show today, but also this is technically, well, it's technically my 21st recording, but since there was one episode that I couldn't use due to some audio that was missing, you are technically in the 20th episode of Voices That Cook. So congratulations, we are in the 20 of Voices That Cook, and I'm not only thrilled to have you on here just because this is episode 20, but you've also had some good voice acting work. You've also got some good cooking under your belt, but you also have some neat artwork and writing behind you as well, which we'll definitely be touching on. But I really, really want to give a shout out to just how good you are in the art world, because you not only made a really awesome looking sandworm for me, but you also made the most splendid David Miscavige audio stage play poster I could have asked for. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, no problem. It turned out really great.
It really did. I'm worth every penny. Please, if you need a really awesome looking poster, highly recommend Kay. And also, if you need some voice acting talents for your projects, I also recommend Kay, which, by the way, what got you started in voice acting, my friend?
I've really been interested in acting ever since I was a kid, just watching cartoons and shows. But as a kid watching The Simpsons, I always thought it was so cool how the actors could voice one character and then change their voice to voice multiple other characters.
Nice. Was there any particular show or performance that made you that maybe inspired you more than others?
I would definitely say The Simpsons was the biggest influence, particularly like Dan Castellaneta, Nancy Cartwright, Hank Azaria, and Harry Shearer, just how adaptable and versatile they are. And I was like, wow, I want to be able to voice thousands and thousands of characters at once.
It's pretty impressive what all they've been able to do. Even though it's been a long time since I've watched The Simpsons, I still remember being blown away by how versatile they were, but also I didn't know for the longest time until like maybe later in high school or college where I started to see what they looked like in person. I was like, oh, did you voice Bart? Okay. I was not who I would have thought initially. So you start to see just how, like, you know, these people can create all different kinds of sounds with how they do different people and such. And it could be really funny and really impressive all at the same time. I didn't have anything that really inspired me growing up to be, you know, interested in wanting to ever do cartoons or anything. I would strongly blame the I Know That Voice documentary for being one of my steps toward that direction. But I had always remembered how good Batman sounded in Batman the Animated Series. So I will give props to Kevin Conroy on that one. And then hearing his voice later on in the Arkham games, and then, you know, hearing Mark Hamill as the Joker, it just made me appreciate those performances so much more. And even, of course, the Metal Gear Solid games. I always thought those had very impressive performances in there, too. So I would probably say the first time I really thought damn, the voice acting is really good. It was probably Metal Gear Solid 2, in all honesty. Which that was the first Metal Gear game I had played from start to finish. And for those of you who have played it, just a quick funny story. There was a friend who let my brother and I borrow his copy of the game. And when we had told him about where we had finished, well, we had finished the game, he had mentioned that there's a part in the game where they say, like, Raiden, turn the game console off right now. He was so freaked out that he actually did.
That's cute.
Which I just remember being just like, what in the fuck is going on? I look forward to hopefully sitting down with someone and showing them the whole Metal Gear Solid series and just let them experience it fresh just to see their reactions to everything, because that's going to be very interesting to see one day whenever that happens. I will make that happen at some point in my existence, and they can also appreciate the voice acting through that too. When did you decide that you were ultimately going to pursue voice acting, and what was your first, we'll call it your first major role that you were proud of?
I've always been interested in acting for a long time, but I kind of put it aside to more focus on art and animation because it is hard to get acting jobs, and they always say have a backup job besides being an actor. So it wasn't until I would say the beginning of 2018 when I finally decided to go more into acting. And so while I was attending high school and in college, I did take a couple acting classes at the side because I thought it would help me with writing stories and animating, because believe it or not, animators also take acting classes because you really need a good read on facial expressions and body language, whether you're animating something or writing something to make the performance believable or writing out the storyboards, like how are the characters going to be placed, what's their expression going to be like. So acting is pretty essential for that overall too. And so I decided to look into acting at the beginning of 2018. I think it was February when I decided to try out one of Bang Zoom's Adventures of Voice Acting classes, because I read that their intermediate and advanced class was going to come to Chicago. So I decided to go with that. And in order to take those classes, you do need some acting experience. So thankfully, the classes I took in high school and college helped qualify for that. So I took the leap and looked into that.
That's awesome.
And it started off pretty slow at first. I did a few fan projects, so it was a pretty slow start. It did take like a couple years. It didn't really pick up until, believe it or not, when the pandemic happened.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me a lot of time, not just to like finally start making a demo reel, but also like start a voice acting resume, which wasn't much, but it was something to start with.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a lot more time to audition for stuff. And also, I really enjoyed Chuck Huber's Now Voice This contest, which is always a lot of fun to do for practice. And I actually took one of his classes the summer of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got enrolled at this school called Exceptional Minds, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a school for students on the autism spectrum to learn and get jobs in animation and filmmaking. When I got to there, it opened a lot of opportunities for me since they have so many connections to big names in the industry. And that's how I got one of my biggest roles, which was in the English dub of the Israeli show On the Spectrum, which is on HBO Max.
Nice!
So how I got that role was the people working on the English dub actually contacted the school because they wanted to make sure that the portrayal was accurate and respectful, but also they wanted to hire actual autistic actors for the show. So me and three graduate students who attended the school, I didn't enroll with them because I enrolled right after they've already graduated. So anyway, me and three graduates got roles on the show.
That's awesome. What was that experience like for you to be able to do that? Was it all done remotely? Were you in a studio?
For me, it was done remotely since I was still in Chicago at the time and the recording was out in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So I record it in my closet.
I've always thought that was really, I've always found that to be really amazing to know that you could still record in a closet and they can use that and they can use your performance for something that's going to be an official dub for something. It makes me feel better about my current circumstances where I'm just in an attic recording and surrounded by quilts and pillows all over here. But I also just think that's really amazing that you got to do that. So I am granting you some applause. I don't want to get too loud to mess with the mic, but very, very happy for that for you. And
thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Also, I'm really happy with seeing what all you've been able to do since then. Have there been any other major roles you've done that you'd like to talk about too?
The other one was this game called Pretty 1 and 2 Exploded and Reloaded, which released October 20th of 2020. Not October 20th. Oh, I don't remember what date, but it was like October 2020. How I got that role was the company held a little contest where two people could voice some of the Prinnies in the game, and I was chosen as one of the two winners.
Nice.
But it was funny, when I won that contest, I was excited, but the one of the prizes was you get a free copy of the game when it was available, and it was for the Switch. And at the time, I didn't have a Switch, so I was like, oh crap, now I need a Switch. And I was planning to get one, but when the outbreak happened, I thought maybe I should put it on hold. And they were sold out like crazy, because people needed something to entertain them while they were stuck inside for hours.
Gotcha.
So I asked for a Switch for Christmas, and I got one, finally, because now I had even more incentive to get one. So yeah, if you play the game, you just, if you hear a Prinny that says, I'll give him my all, dude! That's my voice.
Nice. I am hopeful that one day I will be in a video game. That is one of my big voice acting goals right now, is I would really like to be in a video game.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would love to be an elite of one.
That would be awesome. I would like to be the NPC best friend of the player character. That's what I would like to. If I had to pick one in particular, especially, and I feel like ever since I played Vampire: The Masquerade Bloodline, I really liked John DiMaggio's performance in that game. He was kind of like your best friend in that game, and I just thought that would be just really fun to play the best friend in a video game, someone that the player is always going to want to talk to, interact with. And if I die, they'll get real sad. And if they save my life, they'll be happy. I just like knowing that I could play a character like that, that they could give a damn about, essentially. And, I also think it would be really fun to be, a boss battle in a video game where all of y'all have to kill me.
Like the boss monster?
Something like that. Or even someone that's kind of like in Sekiro or Bloodborne, where I'm a pretty tough piece of shit and might be terrifying depending on what creature or person I am. And maybe I come back for a few rounds. You defeat me the first time, but there's going to be like a reunion match later and then a final battle at the end of the game. That would be fun. That would also be really fun to do. But I'm also just willing to do, I'm pretty open-minded as to what kind of roles would be out there for games for me to do. It would also be fun to be in a visual novel. I think that'd be fun to be a character you can interact with or romance or even just one of those funny extras. I'd be cool with that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would really like to be in a game like Final Fantasy or the Resident Evil games just to see what kind of creatures I would encounter and what worlds I'd be exploring.
If there's one thing I know about you, you definitely like Final Fantasy, especially Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
In fact, you've shared with me some really good articles you've done for Final Fantasy X, and you've even actually You've actually gone, like, and gotten, like, 100% all the trophies, am I right?
Yeah, that's something I did, January last year. What happened was the beginning of that month, I tested positive for, COVID, and I needed something to do, and I've been starting my journey to platinum that game since a few months prior in August, and now that I was in quarantine and had nothing to do, I thought, okay, maybe I'll finally start to complete that. Because the part that was really grueling was completing the sphere grid. And I finally was strong enough and that I completed that where I could take on the Dark Aeons and then finally Penance. And oh my god, defeating that monster without Yojimbo is the most satisfying feeling ever.
I am sure.
Because people will say, oh, he's so easy, just summon Yojimbo. It's like, no, do it with just raw power. It's even more satisfying. It's grueling because it's like 45 minutes of a fight, but it's so worth it.
What? Did you have to look through a guide to make sure that fight would go the way you'd want it to? Or was there, or did you kind of figure it out on your own? I would forgive a guide on any situation like that of how tough that boss has always seemed to me, which I never
mainly
fought
for Riku's, mainly for Riku's mixes, because I haven't memorized all of them, and I had to figure out, okay, which ones could I use for the fight, and then I had to figure out what items do I use to make that combination.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. There's also something that I really thought was interesting about your analysis on Final Fantasy X was how it handled aspects of religion. I thought that was very well thought out, and I remember thinking very similarly about how the game presented that, and I remember aspects of that game having really good story elements that seemed pretty decently fleshed out. And then I went back and tried to help a friend out with playing the game, and then I thought, oh god, I forgot how annoying these puzzles are. There's an interesting give and take with Final Fantasy X where I really love the story and the music and how the battles work, but those puzzles, I would just get on YouTube and just use YouTube to make me just blow through those, because those just kind of halt the game for me sometimes. I'm curious to know what you think of those puzzles.
Yeah, some of the puzzles were hard and I had to be careful with planning them, because since I was playing the PS4 version, if I went back, then I would have to deal with a Dark Aeon first and then try to complete that puzzle again. So planning it in the right order was quite difficult. But thankfully, I've played the game so many times, I was able to plan accordingly. I did have to look up the locations of Albed Primers, because there are a few that are missable, so I had to make sure I got those right away.
So when you were writing your Final Fantasy X articles, did you want to make sure that you had played the game fresh and then wrote everything down, or were you playing and writing as you went along?
Let's see. I played the game so many times, I pretty much memorized what happened. Although I did have to go on YouTube and find the cutscene to replay it again, just to make sure I remembered everything properly.
Gotcha. And is there another game that you're going to be writing about? Because I really liked what you did with Final Fantasy X. I'm curious to know about, and let everyone else know about any other games you're gonna be writing for.
So far, I'm just currently writing about Jack 2, but there's also the article that I wrote during the winter, which was on the movie Perfect Blue.
Oh, yes, I love that one, too. That movie's insane.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, that one dropped a couple months ago in December, and I wrote about why that movie is still relevant today and the legacy and influence it had on modern filmmaking.
That is one of the few movies where I'm honestly genuinely surprised that I woke up the next day and told myself, I'm surprised I didn't have nightmares last night. That's how terrifying that movie is, both from how it presents itself as a psychological horror thriller, but also with how it seemed like something like this, despite how visually terrifying the circumstances are, this seems like something that could happen. And
scary about that movie too. It's like, it's a real thing and it does happen to many celebrities, and that's kind of terrifying, since in a way many people want to be famous.
And there's consequences, and there's things that are that can get out of your control, especially when you want to just make a change or do something different and people are not responding to it in a positive way. It's scary when people perceive you more as an image rather than a person, and it handles those scary aspects so well. And it's definitely a movie I think should be watched twice for sure.
Yes.
Because you'll catch some stuff the second time that you didn't notice before. But I also think it'll make you appreciate the structure and how it's all put together when you know what's coming and you're not just the whole time. I noticed
that too. Like every time I would rewatch it, don't worry, I won't spoil what happens, but when I see a specific character and how they're acting, I felt so cold and so uneasy that they're right there. You don't know it. You realize just how unhealthy their behavior really is.
It's not like Fight Club, but it's like Fight Club. You just notice those details and it just adds to the experience.
And it did have a great plot twist too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a movie I definitely would want to show people and just see their reactions to it as well. That's definitely one I would really love to see people's reactions to. I also used to review movies long ass time ago, and I don't think I ever did like a full-fledged review for Perfect Blue, but I know I would have highly recommend that movie to many, and I recommend all of you check it out. The sub, the dub, both are good. I know you can get the Blu-ray. There's at a good price probably right now on Amazon. It's just a really, really good movie, and I'm glad I have it in my collection. I have the digital version on Prime, but I should get the Blu-ray because it's a gorgeous looking movie.
Yeah, it's a definite must watch.
Oh yes, oh yes. But you know what else is gorgeous though?
Which movie?
Oh, I wasn't gonna say movie though. I was gonna say food.
Food's gorgeous. Also gorgeous.
Yes, especially if you're making like chicken, carrots, and potatoes, and roast them in the oven with butter and ranch dressing. Not ranch dressing, but ranch seasoning. I'm sorry. Ranch dressing sounds a little weird with that, but the seasoning with that, oh, it's great. It's absolutely great. But I am now going to transition to where I can ask you, what got you started in cooking?
For me and my brothers just always loved the food that my paternal grandmother would cook. She would make really good mac and cheese and this awesome Belgian chocolate mousse.
Mmm. And did she help you with cooking, or was that more of an initiative you wanted to do yourself?
I guess she would teach us like the basics, and eventually me and my brothers got hooked, and as we got older, we realized just how much of an essential skill learning to cook really is, because when we got to college, we could easily cook on our own, and most of our classmates couldn't barely cook, and it's like, we realized, oh, if you want to be independent and self-reliant, well, you're going to need to learn how to cook. It's like, oh, that makes sense. So we just kind of saw it as a essential life skill that you need.
It's definitely essential, and I didn't start getting to do it myself until I was living by myself in an apartment, and I just wanted to actually make tortellinis and chili myself, and I'm glad I did, because that's what opened the floodgates, so to speak. It made me want to really, really give it a try and make food for other people. And it was a good experience. And to go from point A to where I am now, to where I would have never thought I would have made a pizza, but I'm glad that I did. And if I weren't picking up pizzas later, I would definitely want to make one. I'm gonna be busy tomorrow, so it probably wouldn't be a good idea to make it today. And then I got some busy stuff on Monday. And then I gotta go dog sit out of town next week. As I was like, if you're gonna make pizza or birria tacos, William, just wait till later in the month. That can be one of the biggest issues with cooking. Is there's some things that you want to do, but you need like a full afternoon or you need a full weekend to just even give yourself the grace to make something that can be as time consuming as that. And you also still need to go get everything in the grocery store for it on top of all that. But it can be worth it, especially as long as you've got everything you need and you're patient with it. You keep an eye on it. Unless it's like something like in birria where you just let the meat simmer for at least 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours, and then just
see if you need to let
the meat cook longer if it's not easily shredding by two forks, which I wish I did that last time I made birria. I wish I had done a test like that rather than go, oh no, they're not ready yet, turns the temperature up. No, don't do that. You need to keep the temperature the same, because otherwise it's going to make them tougher to cut at that point. They'll be more cooked, but they're going to be less tender, and you want them tender. You want that meat very tender. What would you say is the most challenging thing you've ever made cooking-wise?
Let's see. I guess it would have to be when I first made coq au vin for foods class in high school, because it required so many ingredients and we had to keep a budget. I did go slightly over budget. I don't remember the exact amount. It was such a long time ago. But yeah, that was a lot to go through. There was just so much to add in there, but it turned out amazing. Although the chicken turned into a weird purple color because it asked for red wine. Mm-hmm. So it just looks kind of alien-ish, but it tasted amazing.
And I've never had that before, so could you describe what that is to me?
Well, coq au vin is French for chicken and wine.
Oh, okay.
So it's a French dish. It's basically chicken that's cooked in red wine.
Okay.
Although sometimes it's cooked with white wines, it varies. But the recipe I used red wine.
Gotcha. That definitely sounds like something I've probably seen before, but I know I've never had, and I should. I've always had red wine used for making things with ground beef involved, like minestrone soup or spaghetti. But I've not done that with chicken before. That sounds really good.
Another dessert that I find quite challenging to make is actually my grandmother's chocolate mousse. Not because it's hard, but because I have to get the timing right, since it takes 7 hours to set. So I have to make sure that it's ready by the time dinner arrives or stuff like that. So usually I have to make it the night before or wake up early in the morning, let it sit for 7 hours, and it's ready by then.
Damn. 7 hours. That's...
Yeah.
Even for me, that's a long time. I don't mind letting pizza dough sitting in a fridge for 18 hours, like, because you just let it sit. But if you're making sure that it's all good and needs to be there for 7 hours, that's it's a completely different ball game there. At least it feels that way to me. It sounds like weird mapping where it's like 7 hours. Oh boy. And then 18 hours doesn't seem so bad on the pizza, but it's a whole thing. I feel like because I know how to, I kind of know how to make pizza at this point. That's probably why I felt a little more at ease with that. And what you're doing is like a little more intimidating to me. There's still things I still look at and go, how do you do that? And I saw someone who had never made pasta before with someone who had made pasta quite a a lot in his lifetime. It was Joshua Weissman and his girlfriend. His girlfriend had never made pasta before, and just seeing it all happen, I was both laughing about certain things I knew you would need to do for something like this, but then also terrified at, I would probably be freaking out if I were in her position too, because I've never made my own noodles before, and I would love to at some point. So hopefully one day I can also make my own pasta noodles from scratch and create something delicious from that.
Yeah, I've always wanted to make a cake from scratch, but I heard that's really hard to do. I've made chocolate chip cookies from scratch, but never a cake.
The main reason why I keep myself from making my own cakes is because if I learn, I fear I will never stop.
Me too. And I'd probably game it like crazy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I would love to make oatmeal cookies, though. In fact, I'm gonna actually just... Let me see if there's a video I can save for later, just real quick. Oatmeal cookies recipe. It just says oatmeal recipe. I want oatmeal cookies recipe. Here we go.
I've tried like oatmeal chocolate chip cookies, but I've never made those from scratch. I only got like the easy made, the pack you can get from the store.
Is there? Never mind. I found three videos that I'm gonna definitely be watching later involving oatmeal cookies. And if for some reason I ever make them, I will let you guys know how it turns out. I grew up being really, really, really into oatmeal cookies. Whenever I would go to my grandmother's place in Arkansas, there would be a jar of oatmeal cookies. And my brother and I would usually clean them out within a single afternoon. And I don't know what the brand was. I wish I could figure out what brand that was so I could have them again, but it's been so many years that I'm fine as long as it's an oatmeal cookie. I won't complain. But if I ever make them, I'll see if I can do something similar to what I kind of remember. I've mentioned this on the show before, but I remember making sugar cookies with my mom. And I think the main component that my brother and I did with those was just the shaping, from what I remember. And we made essentially heads that looked like Zorak from Space Ghost Goes to the Coast. So we basically ate a bunch a bunch of Zorak head shaped cookies. I don't think that we had the antenna. It was mainly, if I remember correctly, they looked almost like hearts with beaks that kind of like edge out to the left a little bit. That's probably what they looked like for what I can think of how they probably did. I don't know. It's been so long. I'm also really glad I ate before we talked, because all this cookie talk would have made me very, very hungry. And I also think it would be really fun one day to make my own Reese's peanut butter cup type milkshakes. I feel like that
those
would be very
good.
Fun to do. They're always good, and I try to get myself to not have them unless it's a celebratory occasion. Or if someone else, not me, says, you want to go grab a milkshake, because that lowers the chances of me going out and getting milkshakes at a reasonable pace, which I know, moderation is one of the key factors in making sure that you are going to be okay with all the different stuff that you can eat. It's okay to say yes for a week, for like once a week on milkshake. At least I feel like it would be okay. But I always feel like maybe a few months from now, I'll get another milkshake. But then again, it's been a few months since my last milkshake, so I should probably have one this week. I'd probably wait for it to warm up a little bit, because they can be cold. They can be severely cold, especially if you're really enjoying one. And next thing you know, you get brain freeze. That's the only thing I don't like about milkshakes. They can be so...
Yeah, I get them bad.
They can be so goddamn good that you're just... You can't help but want to just keep taking bites. And then the next thing you know, ow, this is hurting my brain so much. I have to put my tongue to the top of my mouth and hope it stops. I almost wonder if there is if there is a way to eat milkshake to your heart's content without having brain freeze problems, I'm sure there is, other than slowing down.
I just eat it slow.
Yes, which can be tough to do when they're that tasty.
It is.
Do you have a favorite milkshake?
Mostly anything coffee flavored.
I like caramel and chocolate. But I also really like the Reese's peanut butter cup with vanilla mixed in. Those are good together.
I had this one where it was coffee ice cream and it had like crushed Heath bars mixed in. That was really good.
Ooh. All of you are probably craving these right now, and I want to apologize, but I also don't, because you knew what you were coming here for, to hear us talk about the yummies, the yummy things.
Yummy, delicious food.
Yummy and delicious food. I don't know what that was. We are silly up in here. I have joked on multiple occasions about what would happen if I were to. I've not done it on a recording of the show. I've done it in my head. I have joked on whether or not I should eat something during the show, and I feel like that would just make it even more difficult for me to just edit. Rather than someone listening to the episode, because I'll be editing and putting it together and just hearing myself eating something. And then I'm just sitting there. It's like maybe 10 p.m. at night or 11 p.m. at night. And I'm editing this particular scene and craving food.
And plus some people probably would find the crunching and chewing sounds distracting.
Yes, yes. So,
going, nom, nom, nom,
so in case any of you are like, why don't you eat anything during the show? I don't want to put future William through that, and I don't want to put you through that either with my...
Yeah, my sister would kill you if you do that, because she hates munching sounds.
Munching sounds... I feel like munching sounds are only good when they are not the focal point of what you're hearing.
Why I can't stand, like, the ASMR chewing sounds. It's like, oh, God.
Oh, man.
Makes me cringe.
There have been a lot of things I have learned about ASMR lately, to where it's like, oh, it's not just sexy or pleasant voices. It's, you can literally rub your hands on pillows, and it's so soothing to hear. It's like, how is this making my brain feel good? I don't understand. The guy is just rubbing pillows with his hands. That's it. And it's soothing. There is a mastery to it that I never appreciated until very recently. And I wanted to make a recording of me doing ASMR of my dog Cliffy, because he's got very soft fur. So you'd have the sort of pleasant sound there. And then on top of that, it's just him going... So you get the pleasant sound, but also the very funny snort sounds, especially if he gets the really loud ones, the which I would usually be holding him at that point when that's happening. There's different ways to make ASMR, and I think one of my favorites that just makes me go, yes, it's just hearing the sizzling sound of a steak on a pan. I could hear that all day without, as long as it's not getting burned, I could hear it all day and just enjoy.
But then you can't smell it though.
Yeah, it's true.
That's the one problem.
You can't smell it. I will mention this. I made some salmon very recently. And I wanted to baste it, and I wanted to make sure that it was, you know, doing everything that I had remembered seeing about basting with food and such. But I had forgotten to turn the temperature down on the skillet.
Oh, no.
So the bottom section of the salmon was definitely burnt as fuck. It was just, oh, God. why did this happen? Because the top of it looked like something I would see at a 5-star restaurant. It had this garlic, buttery, gorgeous layering type stuff with all these seasonings. I just wanted to go, you know what? I was going to try all these, which, by the way, I don't think you need a billion seasonings for salmon. Less is more with something as wonderful as salmon. In fact, salt by itself is good if need be. Chili powder is fine. I use like smoked paprika, garlic powder, and oregano, basil, parsley, and black pepper, and all this sort of stuff.
And yeah, soy sauce just tastes good with salmon, like just to marinate it.
Yes, as does honey. I really like honey, but I didn't have it on what I did with my recent thing because I just wanted to give it a whirl, just experiment. And I was so disappointed with how this the bottom portion of it was. And I should have let it baste longer too, because it wasn't as cooked as I wished it would be ultimately. But the top portion really just looked absolutely amazing. But that's one of the things that's I'm always learning whenever I make something. Cause even when I've made salmon, which I think the best salmon I've ever made was a honey garlic glazed salmon, which I may put a recipe link for it, for a video I saw. Very easy to do, very delicious, highly recommend it. But it's always, you can always experiment and try things, and you'll know whether or not certain stuff works to your benefit or doesn't. And I always think it's worth just giving shit a try on something like salmon or steaks. Just so you can go, okay, this is the way to do it, or this is not the way to do it. You're at least let yourself be open to learning and messing up, because it's not the worst thing in the world if you mess up a steak, because sometimes steaks come in twos. Just you can always do the safe bet on one steak and then get crazy with the other one and see what happens. But if you just have one ribeye, yeah, I can see why I'd be crying too. In fact, I would cry with you, and I would hug you and offer you a beer. And then, of course, obviously, make sure that you listen to Voices That Cook on your favorite podcast app, whatever you're listening to, also helps soften the blow. I don't know why I went that direction. I still tell people that I think the greatest disaster ever that I've done cooking was probably banana bread with my mom.
Oh, God, what happened?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh.
I'm not saying this to back out of the conversation. I'm genuinely having trouble remembering because I was that embarrassed. Because people told me how easy it seemed, and I don't think we had the proper flour and hydration of the flour, and there was probably something that we weren't using properly. Like it was a very bird's eye or blind eye or how, whatever the fucking term is. Just eyeballing it. That's right. We were just kind of eyeballing it rather than following specific directions for it. And I do think that was one of the mistakes we had. I don't even know if we did anything in particularly wrong with the yeast. I don't know, but it just did not taste good. And I was very sad by that. One day I will hopefully rectify that. And I will make a good banana bread at some point. And if there's one bread I would love to make someday, though, I want to make garlic bread, which is far easier to do than most other things I've seen. But I would love to make garlic bread.
I've made garlic bread once. It's actually pretty easy, and it's a good way to use up bread that's starting to go stale.
That's definitely something I'm going to be doing for a good occasion for sure. French bread. I love using French bread to turn that into pizzas. I love doing that. And naan bread. Ooh, if we go to Kroger tomorrow, I should get some naan bread and make naan bread pizzas. Ooh, that would be fun. I like making my own crust, but naan bread pizza is... Ooh, I should learn how to make naan bread at some point. That would be fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun.
I had a question and then it completely slipped my mind.
Oh.
It happens. It happens. And then it's going to be like 2 weeks later, I somehow remember it while I'm driving to work or I'm in the shower or I'm listening to the Lord of the Rings audiobooks, which I'm technically still in Two Towers, but the scene is in Return of the King. That's how far I am. At least on the...
I think the only book I read in the series was The Hobbit.
That you've ever read?
In the Lord of the Rings series, yeah. I've only read The Hobbit for school.
I read The Hobbit for school as well, and... There were some aspects about it I remembered before seeing the movie and then, or movies, and then years later, I had learned that there was an Andy Serkis narration for The Hobbit, and I think right after I had discovered that, there was an announcement that he was going to be coming out with doing audiobooks for all three Lord of the Rings. So it'd be like Fellowship, Two Towers, and Return.
Ooh, that'd
be
cool.
Well, it exists already. Like, as of right now, they exist. And I've already gone through, which, by the way, if any of you are like, ooh, I'd love to hear these, for the love of God, listen to The Hobbit first. Because The Hobbit ties in so heavily into Fellowship. It ties in so heavily to where I'm like, I'm glad I started with The Hobbit, which I really love Andy Serkis's narration for everything I've heard so far with The Hobbit, Fellowship, and so far in Two Towers, which I'm a couple of hours away from being at the halfway point. But I really love hearing him sing. There's so many songs throughout these books, but he just... I liked his rendition of Misty Mountains Cold that the dwarves sing at Bilbo's place more than how they sounded in unison in the actual movie. He just adds such energy and vocal strength to it that you're just like, I kind of want to sing with you on this. And that you kind of need that for stories like this there's aspects to them that might feel dated to some, but they are definitely, they're older stories, but they definitely, you need that energy, you need that excitement and that love that he brings to it that makes the narration so goddamn strong. And he also can do variations of different characters. Like he can do Bilbo very well. He can do Gandalf very well. It may not be entirely Ian McKellen, but it's very good. You definitely know it's Gandalf whenever he does a line for him. But of course, the big thing is you get to hear him as Gollum again, which is already a reason to get the books on Audible from with him narrating, which... Where I am in Two Towers, because they actually have Two Towers in Return of the King, which I did not know this until I started to realize, oh, that's how the chapters are structured. In Two Towers and Fellowship, they have like the first half basically be from the perspective of everyone except Sam and Frodo. And then they have the second half of both books be from the perspective of Sam and Frodo. So whenever I get to the latter half of both books, I'm going to be so excited because that's going to be me hearing much, much more Gollum. Because Riddles in the Dark from The Hobbit was easily my favorite chapter. Just because he's Gollum again throughout that whole chapter. But with Two Towers and Return of the King, I'm so excited to hear those. And there's a lot of well-put-together world building, and I just, as someone who has done a few narrations right now as a voice actor, the fact that he has gone through all of these, I can't imagine the stamina he had to have to do those in the time that I think he did. Like, I think he recorded, I want to say he recorded all three Lord of the Rings books within a short amount of time. Like, it might have, I'm sure it was under a month. I don't think it was like a 3-month thing. I think it was less than that. And it just impresses me so much. Sorry, I had to gush.
It's good.
Tell you what, how about I go ahead and ask you the final question of the show before I start running out of questions to even lose track of. What is your favorite recipe?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'd say probably making curry because I love to experiment with different ingredients to it, and I love how I can easily modify it if I have to.
How do you like to make your curry?
Just like tons of vegetables and just a lot of flavor in it. I like mine sour, so I like adding a lot of like lemons and limes to it.
Ooh, that does sound good. Was there anything else to the recipe? I don't want to have to have cut you off there.
Also, you can make it as hot as you want if you're a hot food addict. My older brother likes it really fiery, but I don't, so I have to try to find it that's like in between where it's hot, but I can still stand it.
Oh, okay. Would you say it'd be more of like a medium hot or probably a bit lower?
For me, medium, but for my brother, probably like really hot.
I can respect that. I'm someone who really likes Frank's hot sauce a whole lot, which is pretty warm, pretty spicy, but it's not like what is that really, really I don't know if it's the Blazing or it might be an S word. I can't think of what it's called off the top of my head, but it's from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Is it Sriracha?
Well, Sriracha, yeah, that can be pretty spicy too. But I remember having like the hottest wing that you could get at Buffalo Wild Wings a long time ago, and it had that delayed effect where it was like that first bite you take and you just go, "Oh, that wasn't too bad." It just sneaks up on you and just it wants to attack you. And I didn't know at the time that milk would calm it down. So I just had like a whole pitcher of water to try to calm down my mouth. And I haven't had those particular wings since. I would be interested in getting another batch of that just to see if my stomach can hold it now or if my mouth can hold it now. But at the same time, I'm like, I could make my own wings at home, and they would probably be more delicious. And I think I'd rather do that instead. Which I do love to make hot wings. They are very fun to do. And I actually like to have them already be like the full wing. Like, I don't break them apart, and I just, you can fry them or oven bake them. They're going to be good either way. But if you oven bake them, I recommend doing it for a while so that way they can dry out a bit more. But then when you can tear them apart and you can twist the bone and dip it to your ranch and eat it like that.
Yeah, those are good.
Mm-hmm. Ever since going to, is it Kookaburra Wings? Not Kookaburra Wings. It was like,
I don't know.
I can't think of the name off the top of my head. It's like a K word or something. I will remember it. I will remember and I will tell you what it is in case there is somehow a place like that close to you. Could it be? I have to know this. So in case, especially in case anyone is listening to this and they hear me say it and they go, "Oh, I know that place." I will not forgive myself if I don't mention the name of it in this show. Here we go. Let me just do this. Big Kahuna Wings. That's what it is. Big Kahuna Wings. If any of you listening, if you have that light bulb moment in your head, I'm going to suggest some point in the near future, go get you some of those wings or see if they are close to you. And if you've never had them before, oh, they're very varied and they're very good. I don't know if they go beyond Tennessee. I have no idea, but they're very good. They're very good. I guess I do have one other last question for you, my friend.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite particular flavoring of hot wings?
I kind of like sweet and sour.
I am a big fan of buffalo wings, but I'm also very partial to garlic parmesan. Very, very much in love with the garlic parmesan. And while I do love Frank's hot sauce, I do also like barbecue sauce as well. So barbecue wings, those are very good too. And I also like just going to a place that can let you experiment. Like maybe you get one wing that's this, one wing that's that, and just see which one you like most. Those can be really fun to do and give you lots of reasons to go back if you can. But yeah, that was me and my very odd brain talking to K. McSpadden today, which I am so glad I got to have you on the show. This has been a fun day and a fun session, and
yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I will have links in the description below for you to check out her articles that we had mentioned earlier. And I'm also going to have in the description below, where can the listeners of Voices That Cook follow you? Where can they follow you, my friend?
I'm pretty active on a lot of different platforms. I have my art station, which is just the letter K and then McSpadden. I have Twitter at KAEMCSPADDEN, so my full name, and also my Instagram, where you can check out my artwork and various other pics at Art by K. McSpadden. And there's also my SoundCloud, which is just K. McSpadden.
There you go. And if you guys would like to follow me on the World Wide Web, feel free to follow me on Instagram at TheVoiceThatCooks and on Twitter at VoiceThatCooks. And do please also follow Voices That Cook, especially if you enjoyed the show. And if anything we talked about today makes you crave food or made you actually want to make the recipes that we had talked about today, please feel free to share those with us. We'd be happy to see them. And I think that's going to do it for today's episode of Voices That Cook. So for all of you out there who enjoy voice acting, cooking, or just listening to the show in general, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have yourself a warm, good rest of your day.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
This was fun. Thank you. Thank you for coming to the show, my friend.
Thank you.